You're listening to Don't IEP Alone with Special Education Advocate Lisa Leitner. For more information about Lisa, the IEP Toolkit, and more ways we can help you in your process, go to adayinourshoes.com. Now back to the show with your host, Lisa.
And welcome back to another episode of Don't IEP Alone. I'm Lisa Leitner, Special Education Advocate. We are in the throes of what is known as IEP busy season. February, March, and April are very busy seasons for busy months for parents and teachers alike, because it's when most IEPs get renewed. So I'm having a lot of really great educational experts on the podcast. And with me today to talk about dyslexia is Russell Van Brocklin. So let me turn the microphone over to him and let him introduce himself. Welcome, Russell. Thank you for being here today. Thanks
for having me. A little bit about my background is I went through this hell. I recall when I was in second grade, I was told I was going into special education, and I forced my way out through history when I was going into eighth grade. I have a school board member that lived across the street, and they literally forced me out through history. I was told I was going to flunk. I ended up getting the history reward for the best history student in my grade. And then I forced my way out for everything for high school. Did well. I was an honor student for my first year in high school. My fourth quarter, I was actually fourth in my class with a 95 average. And then things just got progressively more difficult because of the reading and writing issues that I had. I was told by my AP history professor, Dr. Monahan, not to go to college because my writing skill was actually at the first grade level. I just found ways to boost it up short term. And he was right. And then what I found is what a lot of other professors, successful dyslexic professors found, is we excelled in graduate school. So when it came time for me to make my, to do essentially my dissertation, it was with Dr. Collins, who wrote a book called Strategies for Struggling Writers. I took his work and I came up with a process to increase dyslexic high school students who are highly motivated, highly intelligent going out of college. They went from middle school writing skills to the average range of entering graduate students as measured by the Graduate Record Exam Analytical Writing Assessment. And that took me less than 2 weeks to get his approval instead of the 5 or 6 years that was expected. And we put that into a public school funded by the New York State government. And it ended up, we took over a multi-year study, all the students went from the 0 percentile to the 30th or the 6th percentile to the 70th. They all graduated. They all went on to college. They all graduated from college with no accommodations. And their grade point average was, as predicted, 2.5 to 3.6. And that cost the state, remember this is a little over 20 years ago, less than $900 a student.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. And it took the teacher really only about less than 3 hours to learn the process.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So just for anybody listening today, you know, I talk about IEPs a lot on the podcast because that's what I do, is I help parents, you know, with their IEP. But today we're talking about dyslexia. We're not talking about really IEPs specifically because, you know, one of the things I pride myself as an advocate, and one thing that I think parents appreciate, is that I tell parents what should be, and that, you know, this is what IDEA says, and this is what we should be expecting. But then there's the, this is what is, because what is actually happening in the schools as far as kids' needs being met is not, it's just not what it should be. We are failing a lot of students, but I find that we are, in particular, we're really failing dyslexic students. I find as an advocate, it's the one area where I feel like it's the one where I'm just walking into a brick wall the most, and getting this team to say, yes, it's dyslexia. And yes, you know, we're going to put an effective intervention in place. There's just so much gaslighting with, oh, he's doing fine, he's reading this, you know, and meanwhile, I have eighth graders who are reading at, you know, a first grade level. So I also often advocate for what I call the path of least resistance. And that is, sometimes you have to seek services on your own. And that's not to say I'm approving of letting the school off the hook for their responsibilities. But not every parent has it in them to fight every fight all day, every day. And it's just very difficult, you know, and the statistics don't lie that, you know, half of our prison population is functionally illiterate and that we have this really, really high comorbidity rate between suicide and dyslexia and on and on and on. So we are failing these students. And sometimes you just need to seek, you know, seek services yourself. So, okay. So tell me a little bit more about, you know, your professor and your mentor and things like that and how you got started.
Well, really, when I had to take a look at the program, I'd like to tell you about Professor Holmes, a little bit of his background. He started college with seven majors, ended up with three. His college president set him up with an interview with the second leading economist of the 20th century. And based on that interview, he received the University of Chicago's highest scholarship, beating out a lot of Ivy League contenders. He ended up becoming a full professor at SUNY Center of Buffalo, one of the top macroeconomic professors in the world. So here's my question for you. Based on that, if we were going to give Dr. Holmes the 10th grade, 11th grade English state exam in New York State, how do you think he would do on it?
I mean, you would think that a standardized test from, you know, at that level, you would think that he would just almost get a near perfect score.
He would fail it with honors. No, seriously, the man can't write. So what he's done since he became a full professor is he co-writes articles with another professor who's responsible for writing. The only reason he got into college was in 11th grade, he entered a national science competition back when they really mattered. He won the state of Indiana, then he got third in the country. Okay. So if you're the third best science student in the country, they're going to let you into college. So when he was doing his dissertation, he stopped counting rewriting it after 100 rewrites. Okay. And he says right now, I can't write. So that's why when we did our original program, to give you an example, when we did our original program, we focused so much on just solving it. So the idea was, if students had the writing skills of an entering graduate student of a college graduate, then they could do okay in college.
Interesting. So, okay. So moving on then to Adam's story, could you describe the initial challenges he faced, especially with that same, you know, Regents exam and what this indicates about standardized testing methods for dyslexic students?
Well, what we've learned from Adam was really groundbreaking. He was our second student. He was referred to me from his high school. He failed the New York State Regents exam with a 47 and a 52. He was a 19-year-old high school senior, but his teacher said he was absolutely brilliant. He was a genius. No idea what to do. So we gave him the pretest on the GRE, and the evaluator we had was a State University of New York distinguished professor, Dr. Holichka, as a requirement by the State Education Department. And she looked at his pretest, and she was so angry at his mechanics of writing that she said he should be banned from college. Professors shouldn't have to deal with this. And I've never seen her ever, it just absolutely fire coming out of her nose, angry and upset over what the school produced. Well, a couple of months later, we gave her the post-test. Adam scored in the 70th percentile on the GRE writing assessment. His writing skills, his analytical skills were in the 70th to 80th percentile, depending on which year you measure it. His spelling and grammar were clean at the graduate level. But what we found that was interesting was the mechanics of his writing were only at the 9th grade level. So they only increased about 2 grade levels. So then what we focused on was how do we come up with a mechanics writing process that starts off with young students who can't even write, you know, they're writing a bunch of randomly placed misspelled words, to then do a basic fifth or sixth grade level essay, and then a basic mid-high school level essay. And the nice thing is when I teach the first essay, you know, C-spot run through a basic essay, I can now train teachers to do that in less than 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So you're talking, you know, a bit about the GRE and Adam's pretest for the GRE, which if you're listening, that's graduate record exam. But what do you, you know, from working with him, what do you think that tells us about college and like how well prepared they are for dyslexic students?
Well, basically what I learned from Professor Holmes was we had to do something extraordinary. Or quite frankly, is what I found, that they don't want us. All right. So we had to do something so out of the box, extraordinary. So when we work with a graduate records exam and we just jump the students right up to average, when we work with them privately, we're at the average or above average level. What we found is then when they go on to college is they're fine. These kids generally don't get any other accommodations and they're able to function, you know, just fine with grades between a 2.5 to 3.6. But what we learned from Adam was the mechanics of his writing didn't improve much. It was only two grade levels. So that's why we go back and we focus more. There's a, if you look at Overcoming Dyslexia, second edition, page 78, figure 23, the front part of our brain is about three times overactive and deals with word analysis and articulation. So that's what we focus on with the first two courses. So that by the time we start our more our advanced course now, they can already write at the 10th, 11th grade level. And then it makes transitioning to, into the advanced course much easier, where essentially what we're doing is we're just hyper-accelerating dyslexic students' advanced analytical skills so that they have the writing skills of a college graduate. So when they start college, things are generally just fine.
Oh, wow. Okay, so after going through your original programs, Adam showed remarkable improvements, but can you explain the key components of your programs and how they specifically address the needs of dyslexic students?
Well, if you look at Overcoming Dyslexia, page 78, figure 23, this was everything. The front part of our brain is massively overactive. The back part of our brain has almost no neural activity. With a general ed student, it's the exact opposite. So what we found is focusing initially on word analysis, followed by articulation, okay? And then we combined Dr. Collins's three default writing strategies. He wrote a book called Strategies for Struggling Writers of Copying, Visualization, and Narrative. That helps out a lot. What I've added to it is when we start off working with dyslexic students, we add a few things. Number one, we focus on their speciality, their area of extreme interest and ability. And then we teach them not from the general to the specific, because we get confused. Our primary issue is lack of organization, but from specific to the general. And then we jump into word analysis followed by articulation. And with that, we're now focusing on our strengths. After the first two go ahead.
No, I just said interesting.
So after the first two programs, then when we jump into the GRE, that course is only for students that have committed to going to a top college or university. We hit them with everything. The GRE gives them every topic you can imagine, very highly analytical. And by the time they finish with that, what we had one of our students say, their first assignment in college was exactly what we practiced, and they're through it in no time. They would literally see the essay in their head and then just start typing it out. Wow. So what we wanted to do is to leave the students. So the first two courses, it'll allow you to go to a community college. It's very easy. As I said, I could teach a trained teacher in one day to do both courses. Parents take a little bit more time. We work with them on a weekly basis. But then that pretty much solves their writing problems for going into, for passing their state writing exam or English exam in high school. But it also brings their reading skills up to equivalent level, and it auto-corrects. That was one major thing we found is when we started our original program, the spelling and grammar of the students were horrendous, but then it was clean at the graduate level. Dr. Holichka, she noticed this with all of them, clean at the graduate level. And when we talked to the teacher teaching this for 2 years, she found that, we asked her, how much time did you spend on spelling and grammar? She said almost no time. It auto-corrected. So if you would like, I could actually show you how to help autocorrect the spelling and grammar for students who are writing a bunch of randomly placed misspelled words and to turn it into a basic three-word sentence. Would you like me to do that?
Sure.
Okay, so have you ever had a student who was writing essentially a bunch of randomly placed misspelled words?
Yes.
Okay, just make up a name for the student.
Jacob. That's the one I picked for all my random students, yes.
Okay. What does Jacob love to do? What's Jacob's speciality?
Sports.
Okay. What sport in particular?
Football.
Football. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to have Jacob on a real laptop, not an iPad, not an iPhone. He's going to type out hero plus sign. What are we talking about? Okay. Then we're going to place hero with Jacob. Jacob plus sign. What are we talking about? Jacob plus sign football. Now I'm going to ask you a very specific question. And when I do this, a major dyslexia conference is almost none of the special ed teachers follow it precisely. So I need you to follow my instructions exactly. Does Jacob like or dislike football?
He likes it.
Okay, replace the plus sign with that word. What's the sentence?
Jacob likes football.
Right, but that's not what I asked you. I asked, does Jason like or dislike football? You auto-corrected by adding the S. Jacob doesn't know how to add the S. So he would have said like. So we would have Jacob like football. So now this can get into a very technical discussion about how do we get students to add the S. My effective competition is the Orton-Gillingham approach. All right? It's very complicated to teach students how to add the S with Orton-Gillingham, but it works. We need something much simpler. So this took me 8 years to come up with. So what we do is we have Jacob read what he wrote out loud, Jacob like football, and then we ask him this very important question. Jacob, does that sound generally correct? Jacob like football. What do you think his answer is going to be?
Yes.
No.
No?
It doesn't Jacob sound correct like to him. Football? It doesn't well, sound know. Right to him.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right to him. Okay.
Okay, so then we tell Jacob to fix it. Jacob likes football because that sounds generally correct. So by doing that, we extend that process to doing paragraphs, and that takes a mess and turns it into something where the spelling and grammar, the spelling's clean because here's the key with the spelling. We tell the student not to put a period down until they ask any question they want. Once they put the period down, if there's a spelling mistake or a major grammatical mistake, then they got to retype the whole thing. So what do? They just drop periods. They got to retype it. Pretty soon, they get annoyed with themselves. And they just say, I'm not going to make this mistake. And I say, the least offensive word I found over the years is you made a silly mistake or silly error. So they hyper-concentrate. And sometimes you will literally see the sweat pouring off their forehead. All right, I'm not going to make that mistake. And they have to keep redoing it, but eventually they get it right. And we do 10 likes and 10 dislikes. And eventually we get to about 100 sentences, they're writing, Jason loathes cleaning his room because it's dirty, it smells, and he'd rather be with his friends. Now, that may not seem like much, but in 100 sentences, sometimes we just have repeated 200 sentences. They are now gone from writing a bunch of randomly placed misspelled words to the mid-third level sentence writing ability. And that can normally happen within a week or 2 weeks, depending on how often you work with it. But even with the most severe cases, when the student just sits there and just really concentrates, I'm not going to make that mistake, that's where the magic happens. That's where things just start to autocorrect. It's that simple.
That's great. It sounds very promising. So training parents to teach their dyslexic children, that's different, unique. How do you empower parents with what they need for this role?
We interrupt this podcast to bring you a truth bomb. The IEP process never gets easier. You get better. If you do not learn the IEP process and how to use it to your advantage, your child will get left behind. That's exactly why I created the Don't IEP Alone series of advocacy courses for parents. Join us and gain the knowledge, skills, and support you need to navigate the complex world of special education and IEPs. Visit adayinourshoes.org for more information.
Well, when I was creating the process, I was constantly approached by non-for-profits. I started off doing this in New York City. And what they found is they had a plethora of the most advanced public schools, private schools in the country. And these advanced students needed something interesting to do for their personal statement when they're applying to the Ivy League. Well, telling that they solved a kid's writing problem in middle school is a lot more impressive than doing what they typically did. So we had to make it simple enough to train high school advanced placement students. So when we started looking at how do we get this out there, as you found, the headaches for dealing with the IEP process can be a nightmare. It can take years. And what we simply found is it's just easier to do it yourself. So what we do is we meet with parents. Right now we're setting up parents in groups of 10 per instructor. And they come in, we meet with them once a week. We show them the curriculum. It's very simple. As I said, I can teach to take students from C-spot run to the high school level. For trained teachers, I can do that in less than 6 hours.
Oh, wow.
With parents, yeah, it takes a bit longer. We generally recommend, it takes most parents about 6 months for a course, but that's taking their students from they can't write anything or wherever they are to a basic essay or from a basic essay to a high school level. And what the teachers have told us, the gen ed teachers, is if your kid is in fifth grade or older, until they can write a basic essay, they don't know what to do. They can't do their job. So that's by far our most popular course. And the key difference of how do we get the students engaged is we deal with their speciality, their area of extreme interest and ability. And the most popular one that I've taught is this. This is Walt Disney's biography. And yes, I give this monster to 10-year-olds. Okay. And we focus on one section and then one chapter over and over again until they get it. So remember, it doesn't have to be Disney. I have students working on Secretariat, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln. A lot of boys are interested in World War II, so we work with the best books in that. But a lot of them are about that size. Or you could start off with Harry Potter and then just do it again with a more evolved book. And as they go through those, our idea is if you can write it, you can read it. And at the conclusion, if you can function at this level, all right, then you're pretty much ready for advanced colleges.
Yeah. So you've developed courses that can improve dyslexic students' writing skills. Can you walk us through the progression of those courses?
Well, the first one, we first of all ask, can your dyslexic student write basic sentences like we discussed initially? If they can, we start off with what I like to call the half circle process. And wherever you are, we start off with this because one of the major issues is reading. And you know how difficult it is to train a dyslexic student reading. So this is how we combine reading and writing. So with the half circle process, it's a very simple thing. We first of all find out the hero. So let's say we're dealing with Harry Potter. A lot of students like to start off at that level. We say, okay, Sorcerer's Stone, what does Harry want to do? Give me one or two sentences. Or for more evolved students, we'll have them write a paragraph or five paragraphs, depending on where they're starting off. I even use this process with graduate students. They tend to write more than five paragraphs. So they write out one or two sentences, and then we ask for two things. What is the best action word? That's the word that'll bring the hero closer to their goal. And what's the best, most important word? We then decide which way they want to go. And then that is what we call our base universal theme. Now, here's how we develop a evolved and rich vocabulary. We have the student look up their word in Merriam-Webster's dictionary or Oxford English, and they pick their definition. Now, remember, we're in their speciality. So the motivation is generally much higher than parents could ever imagine. So we have them type out the word and the definition, and then we have them go to thesaurus.com and plug it in. And then what we tell them to do, most of the time, this word is going to be very broad. We want the word that's closest to what's in your head. And you could focus just on the dark orange words or every word, depending on the motivation of the student. We have them type out, if they look at the word, like, do you really know what this word means? And the answer comes back generally no. So you look up the word, you look up the definition that you picked, and you type it out. And then you select how far you're going, you figure out the better word. That's your post-universal theme. And then we show them how to pick an optimum villain that prevents the hero from accomplishing their goal. So now that's a simple sentence. So now they have a much better understanding of what's going on. And then we show them how to connect a few words to make a simple sentence. So here's what I need parents to understand is, how many times does a dyslexic student need to type out the word and the definition until they know it?
I don't know. What is the answer to that?
It takes more than you think.
Yeah.
And a lot of parents say, oh, my child will never do that. I hear that all the time. But then, like, for example, when I'm doing my most popular one, Disney, and a lot of the kids, I'll say, well, if you want to use visualization, we can focus on Marceline, Missouri, and you can go to Disney Magic Kingdom, Main Street USA is that version of Marceline. So maybe you have to go to Disney to fully understand the process. Well, things like that, the kids are very motivated. Okay, they're actually seeing results. They're seeing things that make sense to them. So they go through, and honestly, it takes a couple of months. But at that point, with them constantly doing this, what I've had students where I would say, I call it thesaurization. I'll say, okay, we have your base universal theme. And for the more advanced students, they will go through thesaurus 200-300 words in 5 or 10 minutes. They don't need to look anything up. They know the words. So if they start doing this in fifth, sixth grade, what I found by the time they get to high school and they have to study for their SATs or ACTs, the vocabulary, the verbal section is basically a vocabulary test. They don't need to study. They remember 70 to 80% of the definitions. They know it already.
Oh, wow.
So this is how we leapfrog the reading ability multiple grade levels. So, and here's the other thing. Again, at this point, parents say, my kid will never do this. And then I say, okay, ask them this question. First of all, find out their speciality. That's their area of extreme interest and ability. Not their favorite subject, but what they're really good at, what they would do if they had all the time in the world with no constraints. All right, once you find that out, ask them this question. Have you ever found in your speciality, your area of extreme interest and ability, that you have ideas flying around your head at light speed, key question, but with little to no organization? Again, in your speciality, have you found ideas flying around your head at light speed, but with little to no organization? They're almost certainly going to say yes. And this also works for attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Then you say, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to show you how to force your brain to organize itself by using writing as a measurable output. They're like, huh, so I'm going to be able to organize my thoughts in a linear way, and we're going to do that by writing, and the writing is how we're going to measure how successful we are. They're like, huh, that's me. You ask it the right way at the right time, and now you got it.
Interesting. All right, so we're sitting here, and we're almost at 4 years to the start of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that taught us a lot about kids, right? Everybody was homeschooling their kids, whatever you want to call it. But what do you think, like, what do you see as far as dyslexic students, and like, what does your program do to kind of help those kids?
Well, what got me about the pandemic is I kept track of the sisters and brothers of the students I work with. And most of the time, these are high level advanced placement kids. You know what they learned during the pandemic? Nothing. Our best and brightest students learned nothing. So what got me with the pandemic was I was contacted in early 2022 by the Learning Disability, I'm sorry, by the New Jersey Association of Learning Consultants. And they're essentially responsible to have their members are the ones that help diagnose the concern and also recommend programs. So they asked me to teach them, over 80 of their members in two-hour sessions, how to solve basic writing. So how to take students from C-spot run to a basic essay. And they said that was by far their biggest concern. And so I taught essentially the state of New Jersey how to do this in, you know, one day with two-hour sessions. And I was the only one doing the writing. So that's a place to start off with. If your child is writing, you know, fifth, sixth grade level essays and they're doing okay, but they're not really cutting it at the high school level, then what I do with the second program is we base that off the craft of research. Just, you know what that is. That's a book written by senior professors at the University of Chicago because their PhD students didn't know how to write. So we took the essence of that and boiled it down to a basic essay that comes out around the 10th, 11th grade level when you're finished. Mm-hmm. And once the student gets to that level, then you decide, do I really want to go to an evolved college? Do I want to put in the work and go outside of my specialty? And then we go into our original program. And yes, at that point, it's very easy for parents to teach it because the student's already writing adequately enough to pass high school. And all we're doing is really ramping up their analytical skills to an extremely high amount.
Great. Okay. So tell us, like, what's next? What's in the future for your program? What are your plans? What else are you going to develop?
Basically, there's been an interest for working with graduate students. Like, how do I come up with my doctoral dissertation? How do we jump our reading skills to not only compete with gen ed students at top colleges, but to exceed that? We actually found a way to do both. So this is one of the more interesting ones that has come up. I'm sure you heard of artificial intelligence and the problem in schools. Right. So in our more advanced courses, we figured out a process. So when the student writes an essay, the teacher would learn something somewhat substantive. I call it a whiff of originality. So imagine writing on Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech and saying something original. So every time the teacher learns something. We found a way to combine that and to ethically incorporate artificial intelligence. How do we ethically include artificial intelligence? We explain the process to a certified teacher, and they determine if any AI is going to be used, how much, a lot. It's up to them. Hmm. All right. But until a student can write at the 10th, 11th grade level, I don't think they should be going near artificial intelligence. But what I can tell you is, as somebody with dyslexia, I'm doing things now that could take, like, let me give you an example. One of my mentors is Dr. Gouvenio Sintas. He used to run technology transfer for the State University of New York. He's an MBA, PhD, MD. And he wants to write a book on the historical train stations of Istanbul. So he gave me 400 or 500 words of notes, and in less than an hour, I turned that into a simple guidebook for 5,000 words. And the key thing was we came up with the word meaning instead of history. And I was able to do all that with artificial intelligence. Okay, it's really good at creating a first draft, but you have to go from there. But the thing about artificial intelligence is you have to know your subject matter absolutely cold. You need to know it completely. And dealing with artificial intelligence, being a prompt engineer, is very much like working with a dyslexic student. You have to tell it how to instruct things, how to teach it, and then it can produce these magical things. But dyslexics are going to be using this extensively, but I think we shouldn't start learning how to really use it until halfway through high school. But then when we hit college, we do need to use it. But you have to get approval from your professors and teachers precisely about what you're going to use it, how you're going to use it. Otherwise, it's not ethical.
Yeah. Yeah. Uncharted territory for sure. I know it's even something being discussed in the blog world because people are generating thousands of blog posts a day using, you know, and how can someone who truly writes, you know, how do you keep up? All right. Thank you.
Let me answer that question for you. These blog posts are so generic. There's nothing special. So what really got me interested with your blog is you've won a major award.
Right.
Okay. And that's because you're saying something original. The only thing that I found with artificial intelligence, or how I'd recommend it for individuals like yourself, you know your subject matter, you can use it to get you a good first draft, but then you have to rewrite it because it doesn't know what you know.
Yeah.
That's the key thing. If you can't add things that are original, that are unique, it's just a fad. It's nothing.
Yeah.
But it's really good at getting you that first draft.
It does. That's all it's really good for. It does do that, but I've experimented with it a little bit, and honestly, it needs so much heavy editing that it's almost mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, and that's where the practice with prompt engineering comes in. The only reason why I'm saying it for dyslexics is writing, even after everything we do, is still difficult for us. And if we can use it appropriately to help make that process easier, that's what it's there for. But it's not what everybody else, they think it's a panacea. It's not. It's a good first draft, but you really, if you don't really know your subject matter, you're creating useless garbage.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. Okay, I will put links in the show notes for anyone who's listening, but tell us where to find you.
You can go to the link in the show notes. And there, if you're interested in one of our classes, we're giving you a 33% discount. But our general website is dyslexiaclasses.com. And I would just say, please contact us. We offer a free 90-minute strategy session where we discuss things with you and your dyslexic child, see what it's like. And what I just want people to understand is what we do works. The other process that works absolutely is an original Orton-Gillingham or Orton-Gao approach. These are what the top private schools use in the Northeast. If you want to use that, by all means, go ahead. If you want something more affordable that you can get done much quicker, that's what we do. I just want to make sure that your dyslexic child gets the educational support that they need so that they can be successful. I don't want them to go through what I went through.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really bad out there right now and getting worse with so many, the little help that they were getting, now teachers are leaving and it's even, you know, it's much worse. So, all right. Well, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Don't IEP Alone with special education advocate Lisa Leitner. We're so glad you've joined us and would love to connect with you outside of the show. For more information about Lisa, the IEP Toolkit, and more ways we can help you in your process, go to adayinourshoes.com. From self-care tips to common IEP mistakes, there's even more to explore. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast and subscribe to never miss an episode. Until next time, don't IEP alone, and you don't have to.